Hey, dealmakers, welcome to the show where it's all about financial freedom with real estate. Let's do this.
You're listening to the Financial Freedom with Real Estate Investing podcast, hosted by Garrett Lynch and Michael Blanc, where we talk all about how you can achieve financial independence through apartment building investing. Whether you're just starting out or you want to scale your syndication business, this is the show for you.
On today's episode, we're going to take a look into the world of transforming a property. And we're going to talk about multifamily syndications, but it's with a slight different twist. Because our guest today is Alex Cartwright, and what he's doing is converting hotels into multifamily. Now, this is very interesting because he gets very specific about his journey going there because in our mentoring program, he actually learned how to raise money for apartment buildings, but he put a spin on it because he felt like he had a better shot at getting a deal done, and he's not wrong. It's been hard to find deals over the last 8 years. It's been hot, and then there's COVID, and there's interest rates, and it's hot again. It's up and down. For some reason, it's always hard to find deals. But what he describes is essentially an opportunity where you're basically changing the use of something. It's like when short-term rentals came out, and you're buying a house, and you can actually literally pay market for it even more, and it doesn't matter because you're going to actually generate much more income on that than a normal single family house rental. So you're changing the use of something. And this is what he's doing with hotels. And he's talking about the economics of that. And it is very compelling. So we're going to do a deep dive with Alex Cartwright about this. Before we get that, I want to do a shout out to Maggie Casey, who left us a review on Amazon for the Yellow Book. She says, this was an excellent book, but it is not a book that I breezed through. There's so much content in this 250-page book. Much of it, you'll want to stop, take notes, reread a chapter, and follow along with the additional content. That's right, there is actually a companion course that goes along to it when I'm talking about a deal. I actually have a video that shows me how I analyze that deal. So that's what Maggie's referring to. So thank you, Maggie, for that. If you haven't checked out the book yet, it's on Amazon's called Financial Freedom with Real Estate Investing, just like the title of this podcast. It's a fantastic introduction into the world of multifamily syndications. So if you've read the book, we'd love to have a review as well as for this podcast, leave us a review in iTunes. We'd love to shout you out as well. We're looking for people who have done a deal recently. So email us at support@themichaelblanc.com or tag us on social media. And we'd love to have a quick interview with you on a deal that you've done that maybe we helped you do in some way. And today is Bibi Ofiri. He's one of our Dealmaker Mastermind members. It's kind of our community that we bring together. It's an online community where we network and we help each other out. We answer each other questions. We learn how to analyze deals. And she completed two deals at the same time, overcoming a bunch of challenges like a partner withdrew, a crucial team member left, and a lender backed out just 1 week prior to finalization. My goodness, Bibi, looks like we might have to have you on the podcast to find out more about that. But despite that, she secured $2.2 million funding with a 24-hour period to ensure closure. And so they raised a total of $10 million for both transactions. That is awesome. Congratulations on that. So with that, let's bring on our co-host, Garrett Lynch. Garrett, what's going on?
Hey, Michael.
So we have a new deal called Overlook Apartments, and we're very excited about it.
Yeah, it's a fantastic deal that we picked up. So we have the luxury, because of the reputation that we built in the industry, of seeing deals before anyone else. So literally, brokers will come to us first before they show it to any other buyer, and they'll say, hey, you guys want to take a crack at this? If not, we'll take it to other people, but let us know what you think. And so that's how this one was brought to us. It was right in our buy box. And we like to buy deals that are like C+, B- deals, but in like A locations. So there's that big potential upside. And this is exactly that. It's a C+ deal, direct to seller, off market, and an amazing amount of upside. Completely 100% classic units. And it's on like a main thoroughfare in a super high growth area of Atlanta. And so once we landed this thing, we couldn't have been more excited for it because it's just right in our wheelhouse. And then we went and secured an amazing loan as well. Once we got in our contract, we weren't sure exactly what the loans are going to look like. And we just played broker ourselves with different lenders and kind of pinned them against each other to get a 5-year loan that's completely interest only the entire time at a fixed rate of 5.6%. So just awesome all around deal. This is a great time to be in multifamily and buy new deals because pricing has fallen so far from the top. So this is a great time to pick up something.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And just if you're watching, listen to right now, the world of multifamily has changed drastically. In fact, it's hard to recognize. Things are so unbelievably different. And normally market cycles might take 5 to 10 years to swing from an up to a down cycle. That happened literally within 18 months and really only because the Fed increased interest rates 11 times in a row, which has never happened before. And so we took when the height of the market was March of 22, height of the market. And then since then, it has fallen considerably, sometimes 20%, even 40%. The prices have come down because the interest has gone up so much. And obviously, the cap rates and valuations tend to move with each other as well. And this has really depressed prices. So if you're a buyer right now, it's fantastic. Not only are prices lower, but the interest rates really don't matter at all. It doesn't matter what they are, as long as they're stable, right? If they're stable, if they're high but stable, you just work it into your underwriting. What's problematic is if you put your underwriting in and it goes way, way beyond what you thought, that's problematic. But if the interest rates stabilize at 10%, it wouldn't matter. We would just put it in a deal and underwrite the deal with 10% interest rates. So now we're getting a deal that is vastly higher from an interest perspective than it was literally 18 months ago. That's a lot different. The other thing that's different is the loan to value is substantially less as well. Back in the day, 7 years ago, 18 months ago, we're getting 80% loan to cost, meaning that you can fund the purchase, but you can also fund 80% of the construction. Well, that's no longer the case. You can't fund construction anymore. And the loan proceeds from an agency debt is like about 65% right now. And to get up to anywhere near 70% or so, you have to layer over pref equity or mezzanine debt. You have to be kind of creative with these things just to actually get deals done. That's totally different. So loan to value is much lower than it was 18 months ago. And so these deals that are being picked up right now are getting picked up at extremely low valuations at very high interest rates, right? With very low loan to value. So the deals now are just so different. You could argue that 18 months ago, we were at the top of the market. And you could argue that we are now at the bottom of the market, all within a very short period of time. So we're excited to pick that up. It's been a minute for us, Garrett. And yeah, we had one under contract 3-4 months ago, and we were also very excited. It didn't see the light of day. Why did it never see the light of day?
That one just didn't pass our DD. So we have a pretty strict process on our DD to make sure that we're not picking up something that is going to have pain points down the road. And so we found on that last deal that it just wasn't, had issues with different things related to construction mostly. So we wanted to obviously get credits for those things, and the seller wasn't willing to do it. And so, you know, I'm not buying it. And this one though has checked all the boxes. We've already gone through DD. It's exactly what the seller for the most part has told us. And it's a workable deal. And so it's really something that we're excited about, and we're happy to launch it. If you guys want to get involved in the deal or want to check it out, reach out to us at invest.nighthawkequity.com. So invest.nighthawkequity.com. Check it out. See if it's for you. We'd love to partner with you.
Yeah, that's exactly right. This is a 506c offering, so we're allowed to blab about it on the air here, which we've never done before. We can put a billboard up if we wanted to, take out ads on the radio station. But this will do. Invest.nighthawkequity.com. And the cool thing is you can actually watch the webinar and learn more about this opportunity. And it may be for you or someone that you know. It's a really good opportunity to get in on the ground floor with an amazing time to pick things up on the market.
So you have to be accredited.
You have to be accredited. Fair enough. You have to be accredited as well. Yep, that's good. Just going to show with Alex Cartwright. He's a founder and managing partner of Villicus Capital. And he's, like I said, he's an expert at converting hotels to apartment buildings. He's also interesting in associate professor of economics at Ferris State University. We don't have too many professors on the show. And he's also an active member of our Dealmaker Mastermind. So with that, let's learn all about this niche of converting hotels into apartment buildings. Let's get in the show with Alex Cartwright. Alex, welcome to the show today.
It's great to be here. Good to see you, Michael.
Yeah, good to see you as well. So I want to know, you're some kind of economics professor, right? Something like that.
That's right. People think that I know I've got some special knowledge or some special crystal ball because I have a PhD. I do know the economic way of thinking, but that doesn't make me any kind of super forecaster. But in my non-real estate life, I'm a professor of economics at Ferris State University, which is right outside Grand Rapids, Michigan, where I live.
Now, we don't get too many economics professors in the profession here. And, mm-hmm. you know, you look at the, you know, the stereotypes of the stodgy professors wearing the bow tie and, you know, you have very proper language, and you know, and that we don't really know associate professors were being entrepreneurs, right? Well, this is why we teach. We don't really necessarily do.
They're in the ivory tower.
I'm just curious, like what went on? Because it took you a little while to make a decision to move forward with this entire thing. But why were you looking at real estate in general? Like just, and then I want to know, after I understand what was going on and why you're thinking real estate, I want to know how you actually decided to take action, because a lot of people read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and a lot of people want to get rich and da-da-da, but they never do anything. But the real question is, why were you looking at real estate in the first place?
So let me address a little before that. It is hysterical. I can talk bad about academics. It's all right. And I can say really anything I want now because I have tenure. And that's what makes a lot of the academics just kind of lazy and not really on the edge of looking for the next opportunity or really seeking financial freedom, because they've got kind of cushy lives. Like, it's good work if you can get it. And by the way, you want to ask me any question about is college worth it, et cetera? Absolutely not going to hurt my feelings. Like, as far as I'm concerned, a lot of degrees are just signaling that you know how to show up and on time and listen to an authority and really be a good employee. And I don't know that a lot of degrees going to do a lot for your human capital, so to speak. Economics, of course, not being one of those degrees. But if you want to have that conversation, I'm not going to at all be insulted. I'm not of the opinion that everybody needs to go to college just because I'm a professor. I became interested in real estate and entrepreneurial type things from a very young age. And really, it started because I went to graduate school in a very expensive market, Washington, D.C., and I just couldn't afford to get a small apartment for myself. And I was amazed at how you could buy something and rent out the rooms and that I could live for very cheaply or maybe even nothing. And that got me thinking about how, wow, you can take an asset, chop it up, make it more valuable. I ended up writing a dissertation about how contract law leads to better and worse economic growth in different countries. But it's real estate that inspired that. So when I was 21, 22 years old, of course, the bank had no faith in me, even though it, in my mind, made a lot of sense. So they let me buy some house in Northern Virginia and rent out the rooms. And so I couldn't get into real estate because I didn't have a real job. I was a student, right? And so what I started doing, though, just because I was fascinated with the idea of you buy something, cut it up into different pieces, and rent it for more money. This was back in 2013, 2014, when UberX was really becoming a big deal. I went out and I bought a half dozen Toyotas, bought them all pretty quickly before they all hit my credit report. And then I started renting them out to people that wanted to drive on Uber. Maybe they didn't have a car, they didn't have a hybrid, they didn't want to use their personal car, whatever the story was. And I was renting out my $10,000 Prius for more than $100 a day because I was renting it out to different people and on the same day. And so that was a lot like real estate, but just applied to the car level. That taught me a lot about managing people, taught me a lot about budgeting for maintenance and repairs. And that was such an involved business that all I could do the whole time was and I did about 3,000 trips myself driving for Uber. And I spent a lot of that time listening to your podcast. And so, of course, as I'm doing something entrepreneurial and as I was shut out of the real estate game, all I'm doing is comparing buying cars and leasing them to drivers with buying apartments and leasing them. And I'm really thinking about the scalability of it. But why, you asked why real estate specifically, and I come at it as an economist, so I'll give you an answer that maybe other guests don't give you. I take what's called the efficient market hypothesis very seriously. And so that's a fancy word for the idea that there are not $20 bills just laying around on the sidewalk. In other words, if there's a profit opportunity out there, the economist is like, you're wrong. There's probably some smart entrepreneur that's already taken advantage of that profit opportunity. Now, of course, if you're an entrepreneur, you can't think that way. You can't walk around and think, yeah, all the profit opportunities are gone. So these two types of mindsets are in conflict, right? But I take pretty seriously the fact that entrepreneurs are smart and profit opportunities do get scooped up. And I've always been fascinated with how, and maybe you're aware of some of these statistics, if you look at people who manage money, like a hedge fund manager or what they might call an active fund manager. Those people only do what we call beat the market, which I'll explain in a moment. They only beat the market about 5% of the time or less over a 10-year period, meaning that if you hand your money over to a money manager, and of course, you've got to pay them some fees to manage your money, that they need to generate a return for you above some benchmark. Because of course, you could take your own money and buy an index fund. Like you could invest it in the S&P 500. And over the last 30 years, that's returned something like 10%. And so if you're paying someone to manage your money, they need to generate at least 10% for you, right? And if you look over, and they need to generate that net of their fees, and of course, net of the risk that they're taking on your behalf. And of course, these guys get paid whether or not you make money. And so if you look at like a 10-year time horizon, people that are managing money, active managers, almost 99% of them do not do what we call beat the market, meaning generate a rate of return for their investor that exceeds the S&P 500 average. And so to me, that says two things. Wow, it is really hard to beat the market. You better know what you're doing. But that also means, too, if I'm going to get off my rear end, go out there and look for an opportunity, try and run my own business and not just buy the S&P 500, which I could do completely passively, then this means I need to know I've got a very solid chance of truly beating the S&P 500. And in the finance world, they call that generating alpha, generating a rate of return over some benchmark. And your benchmark should never be zero. Maybe it's not the S&P 500, maybe it's government bonds or some other more conservative investment, but your benchmark is never zero. And so I start thinking about which asset class am I going to truly generate alpha in? And I'm convinced that not just is that real estate, but that is multifamily real estate, where in any economic environment, folks need a $1,000 to $1,300 a month apartment to live in. They need that in every major metro. I don't know what Google or Facebook or Amazon or Netflix, I don't know what they're going to come out with that's going to destroy demand for apartments. There's no macroeconomic reason to believe that building is going to get any cheaper or any easier, right? And so there are all these fundamental reasons why multifamily real estate made sense to me. And while it looked like a compelling asset class to try and generate true alpha in. And so that's why I started chasing it.
You're such an academic. I love that though. But on the other hand, I have not ever heard it like that before. And it's a higher probability play to build alpha than almost any other asset class. Again, I wouldn't totally have used agree. Those words, but I've said the same thing using different words. But here's the other question. You said it earlier. You know, you have tenure. And when I hear that, there are a lot of people I speak to that are actually high income earners, just in general, and their life ain't so bad. And I find this a problem. In fact, I just released a video on this exact topic. I'm basically saying if you're a six-figure earner, you got a major problem if you want to be financial free because your life ain't so bad. You know, my life ain't so bad, but I don't want to work for the next 20 years, but my life ain't so bad. So why throw it out the window? Why have to explain to your friends and family that you are about to embark on this entrepreneurial journey to become financial free and I'm going to quit my job? They're like, why would you do that? You're an idiot, right? So why go down that road? And you know, in your particular case, you're a tenured professor, very similar. Why would you go down this route? What made you actually go down that route and overcome that huge inertia?
There are two big things, all right? And I'll try to not be as long-winded as I can be.
We want to talk about some of the deals you've done, Alex, but this is an important question because it holds a lot of people back.
I understand. There are two reasons. And I think that one, you understand if you're just have an entrepreneurial mindset is there's almost no other option. But two, those people that are the high income earners, you're right. They have a huge problem because they have no sense of how fragile that income is. And I am fortunate to have been in a situation where I had to sleep in a car during graduate school and where I got denied one time on a housing application. I didn't make enough money to get approved for a rent-controlled apartment. And I know that there is just no kind of stress like not having money. You just do not have the same kind of control over your destiny. You are not thinking about the people. You're exactly right. The people that are earning $100, $150,000 a year, they have maybe never had to think about the kind of problems that somebody that has nearly nothing has to think about. And the people that have had nearly nothing, they're well aware of how fragile a high earning income is. Like a lot of those folks, they are one divorce, one medical emergency, one family member's divorce or medical emergency away, or one change in their boss's attitude away from not having very much. And they need to have a plan B. And not just that they need, it's actually deeper than that. It's not just that they need to have a plan B. They need to feel the satisfaction of being totally and completely in control of how much income that they produce, right? And this is a great thing about the United States of America. I have a lot of students in my office all the time that they're so paranoid about their GPA, what they're going to major in, like what the rank of the law school is they're going to get accepted to. And all I can do is think to myself, like, if you can really learn to be a good entrepreneur and be self-reliant, like in the United States of America, the major, like what is printed on a piece of paper with your name on it, like just who convinced you that this has got so much power over your destiny or what you're going to be able to do in life? There's no limit. And you're right. The people that are comfortable, they don't have the opportunity to confront that reality. And therefore, they're a little bit blind to all the opportunity that there is out there at the same time. So what fortunately pushed me to not be complacent is just, I've been in a situation where I've had literally no money. I've been in a situation where I needed to support my siblings and my parents. And that was not fun at the time, but I'm grateful for that situation because I'm not complacent. The second answer to that is, I love what I'm doing and I believe what I'm doing. And this is what learning a lot of economics just won't teach you. Like you can be really good at underwriting. You can be a really smart business person. But at some level, what you need is a very compelling mission, like for yourself, for your life. And let me tell you why. I was in the airport a couple of weeks ago, and I came across another professor that happened to be boarding a plane that I was. And he's like, "What are you doing?" And I said, "Well, I'm going to this town over the weekend. I'm looking at this hotel that's for sale." And he's like, "How many properties do you have? How many hotels do you have?" Like, he's like, "You economists, you're such capitalist pigs. Like, when is it enough for you?" And I thought to myself, like, I barely knew how to respond to this guy because I thought to myself, I never think about enough. Like, I don't have some hedonistic goal about, you know, a bunch of Ferraris or big houses or these kind of things that you experience through your five senses in life. Like, these things are ultimately not motivating. I think to myself, well, I have the capacity to go out there and create more safe and affordable housing. And I can make the tenants' lives better. I can make the investors' lives better. And I'm excited to do that. I think that I'm good at doing that. And so I want to flourish. I want to develop those capacities of mine. And I want to make sure that I'm multiplying those talents that I've been given. And that is innately motivating to me. And so if folks haven't found out exactly what that is, and especially if they've never been broke, yeah, it's going to be very hard to break out of that comfy job.
Yeah, I find a lot of motivation also is just being able to control your time, I think. So as a mm-hmm. plan B, it's not going back to every money, but it's also really time control. And the honest truth is, you know, entrepreneurs that may quit their job, they actually work arguably harder than they did their own job. The difference is they control how they work and they're now working for themselves. And that's very powerful as well. Now, I know you joined our mentoring program. You actually just said, "Hey, this is pretty cool. I'm going to need help. I'm going to work with a team of experts." And we typically obviously teach you how to find deals and raise capital. And you learn all those things, but you kind of put a twist to it. How did you change the traditional apartment strategy and make it work for you? Hey, are you tired of the stock market volatility or feeling like there's more you can do with your money? Do you dream of owning your real estate but not sure where to start? Now, here's the thing. You're not alone about this, and it's not your fault. There's so many options out there, from wholesaling, flipping, to landlording, and turnkeys. Like, which one should you do? Which one's right to you if you want to get into real estate? And the truth is, none of the things I just mentioned will actually make you financial free and put you on a strong financial footing. But not to worry.
I have a solution for you, a new idea perhaps, if you're open to new ideas. And that is the following: that we have found that the number one way to fast track your journey to financial freedom, build wealth, and retire is through apartment building investing. Now, you're probably thinking, that's great, Michael, but I don't have the experience or the money to get into apartments. And the good news is that you don't need previous experience or a bunch of money in a bank to get started. And I can say this with confidence because we've helped so many people of all walks of life do their first deal and become financially free. In fact, we've helped students close over $1.5 billion in real estate. Now, if you're skeptical, that's okay. If you're skeptical is fine, but you're open to this new idea, then let's have a conversation. Go to themichaelblank.com/call and schedule a strategy session to explore working with us like so many others have before you as well. We're really excited to guide you on this journey, and don't let fear or disbelief or what you think is possible hold you back. Remember, the only thing standing between financial freedom is action. And this is the one thing I want you to do right now is go to themichaelblank.com/call and schedule that call with us. It may be the most exciting call that you'll have all year. Let's do this.
I will do that. If you don't mind, I want to just go back for 1 second. For those people that are in that $100,000 a year job, that I think that we make this mistake often in our thinking. We think that if something is familiar, it's safe. And lots of things that are familiar are safe. But just because something's familiar doesn't mean that it's safe. And therefore, just because something is different, that does not mean that it's risky. Some stuff that's different is risky, but one doesn't imply the other. That's the fundamental breakthrough that I think those folks need. The different twist on it was, and I don't want to discourage anybody out there, but so and by the way, I've attended a ton of your events and purchased different programs from you. I mean, starting maybe back in 2018 or 19, like right when I was still purchasing, you know, 2 unit here, 4 unit there, 10 unit there, before I really was able to scale to large properties and syndication, I knew that's where I wanted to go. It took some time. And one thing that I was in kind of what was holding me back was I know that in the business world, what you don't want to do is compete on price. Like, I would hate to be selling corn or soybeans or watermelon. Like, when you go to the grocery store, you never look at what farm your watermelon came from because you don't care. All watermelon to you is kind of the same. So how do you get ahead as a watermelon guy? You got to compete on price. That's tough. You got to somehow be more efficient than the next guy, and they could probably copy you. You've got to have, so the way that a business really is able to not compete on price is they, one, either have some kind of IP or they have a differentiated product. And they've convinced, maybe via marketing and positioning, they've convinced their customer that I'm worth paying more for because my product is different. Like, that's Starbucks all day long. The coffee is not that different. The environment's a little different. The experience is a little different. They've convinced you that they're different enough that you go to Starbucks and pay a little bit more than going to McDonald's. And so applied to syndication and the multifamily space, I'm looking at a whole bunch of folks out there that are trying to buy the C-class property in the B-class neighborhood or the B-class property in the A-class neighborhood where it's mismanaged and it needs a few hundred dollars. We can bump the rents of $100 or a couple hundred bucks by doing some remodeling. And then we're going to crank up the value. We'll either sell, we'll refi, or both. And that's a great business model. But I was worried that everybody was doing that. And so I tried to do that. And I would say mildly successful in doing that. But as interest rates really came down in especially 2020 and 2021, rates are coming down, cap rates are going straight down. And I'm asking myself as an operator, like, what unique advantage do I have? What unfair advantage do I have? How am I going to get the off-market deal that is not passed on to the more experienced guy? How can I get better debt terms than the more experienced guy? How do I get my construction to be more streamlined than the guys that are vertically integrated in their construction? And one answer to that question is you just work harder. And a little bit of luck is required to just be the first person to find that off-market deal or just be at the right place in the right time. And there are people that scale that way. But I thought to myself, what I need is a niche where I'm not competing with everyone else. And I stumbled into this kind of by accident. I was at a conference, which is a phenomenal use of time and energy. Folks ought to have a minimum amount in their monthly or annual budget to be going to conferences. Like the ROI is that and books. You pretty much can't overspend on those things. You get so much out of them. This is a great example of why. I'm at a conference and I happen to be talking to a broker at a conference, and he says there is a hotel for sale in your area in Grand Rapids, and we ought to go and look at it together because I think that it makes sense as a conversion to multifamily. And I thought to myself, this sounds like an absolute outrageous pain in the ass. Like, we are going to go to the city and get this thing rezoned to multifamily. And then we're going to take the franchise off the building. Most hotels have franchises on them. And then we're going to add a kitchen to every unit. And then you want to talk about value add. Like, and then you want to talk about vacancy. Then we're going to have essentially an empty building that we have to lease up from zero to make an apartment complex. All of these things sound like huge barriers. They all sound hard. And they are all hard. But one of the rules that I try to live by is that whenever you encounter a problem, you put a price on it and you get really good at putting a price on it. Like a lot of experienced real estate guys, they don't go to a house and say, this is too ugly, it needs too much work. They don't say that out of principle. They put a price on what the house needs in order to see whether or not it's worth investing in. And so I sat down and did the same thing with the hotel. And that was hard to do at first. It's very hard to do. There's a lot of moving pieces. And what I realized is that all those problems I named off to you, having conversation with the city, getting the franchise taken out, adding the kitchens to the rooms, and then getting it leased up from zero, those problems are just frankly worth solving. And they're worth solving for a handful of reasons. Number one, hotels trade at a cap rate that's in the mid to upper teens, right? They trade at a much lower valuation, right? Higher cap rate, lower valuation than multifamily. And this is why. A cap rate is at some level a measure of the durability or the projected or anticipated durability of a property's income. Well, hotel income is very variable. It goes like this. And hotels are also very management intensive. If you don't have the right housekeepers, if you don't have the right marketing folks, then your occupancy suffers. And as a matter of fact, most hotels are marketed and are evaluated by how much revenue they bring in, not even by the NOI. And that's because who the operator is really matters that much in the hotel world. So you've got hotels that trade at much lower valuations to multifamily, number one. Number two, business travel has not rebounded since COVID. Number three, what I came to appreciate is that unlike an apartment, a hotel has more limited lifespan. So a hotel might start off as a Marriott Courtyard. And 5-7 years go down the road, Marriott demands that the hotel remodel according to the Marriott standards with the Marriott paint and with the Marriott furniture, so forth and so on. They call that a PIP, a property improvement plan. Sometimes the owners can't afford the PIP. And sometimes the PIP is $20,000, $30,000 a unit. And the hotelier says, this is just not, it's not worth it. And there is no negotiating with Marriott about their brand standards. So at that point in time, maybe then it becomes a Best Western. And then after a few years of being a Best Western, it becomes a Super 8. And then it becomes what I consider the kiss of death. It becomes an Oyo. And then after it's an Oyo, it's just mom and pop hotel. And they're in the death, I call it the death spiral, where they drop the average daily rate to try and boost occupancy, but occupancy doesn't pay the bills. They're attracting a crowd that is bringing crime and other unseemly activity to the hotel. They're not saving to remodel. And the hotel owner ultimately has got an asset that's deteriorating and they cannot afford to do the capital improvements that the property needs, and they're ready to sell. But hotels in great locations, they've got great amenities, so those can be purchased really cheaply. And cities, not every city, but a lot of cities understand that these older, problematic hotels and motels that are attracting crime and other unpleasant behavior, that these properties have no future, and they would love to see them turned into affordable housing. And you contrast that with the multifamily side, right? all the people that listen to this podcast are looking for the C-class property that in the B-class neighborhood that they can buy, upgrade, and bump the rent on. And everybody that listens to this podcast knows about how unaffordable single-family homes are right now and how people that are renting have record-high incomes. Oh, we've got all these people crowding in to the multifamily space. And the people that used to live in A-class are now kind of living in the B-class. And the people that used to afford the B-class property, now they've kind of been pushed into the C-class. And the people that 5 years ago were in C-class, where are they going? Like, those people are really constrained. And that's why, as you kind of go and look at the lower grades of properties, well-run low-grade properties have amongst the lowest vacancy rates in all of multifamily, because those folks just don't have anywhere else to go. So you've got all these hotels that can be purchased cheaply in great locations. And at the same time, in multifamily, that's where all the demand is for affordable stuff. And that's exactly where none of these developers can afford to build. There are a lot of headlines right now about this record supply of multifamily coming online. But you dig in and look at exactly where that supply is and exactly what those properties look like. And they're essentially all Class A properties. And so I thought, this is the niche that I am going to follow. I am going to make a rule where I don't look at other multifamily, not because there aren't great opportunities out there, but because I want to be an expert on buying hotels and converting them to workforce housing. And that's going to take a lot of practice. And so I'm not going to get distracted. That's what I want my brand to be. So from that realization at that conference until closing the first deal, that took about 18 months, right? That was hard. But now here we are. And I'm excited to tell you about some of the metrics on the deal we just closed.
Yeah, go ahead. I was going to ask you how it's going because you know, this is the thing. When things are tough, you kind of start looking, in this case, tough to buy. But having said that, it's been tough to buy multifamily for the last 8 years. The market's hot. Now it's cold. Now there's COVID. Now there's interest rates. Right. So what I love about this, I think I always love change in use of something. This is why the whole idea of short-term rentals was so cool. Right now, I can pay market price for a house. Heck, I can overpay market price. I'm changing the use. I don't care because I'm going to make way more money. And so now you're taking a hotel. Like, I don't care. I'll give you more than you're asking because I'm going to do this different thing that's going to be much more profitable. And so I like the appeal of that. I really do. So yeah, to share with us how the property, how it's going and some of the metrics, I'd love to hear more about that.
Sure. I'm glad to tell you about like exactly the types of hotels that I look for and the conversion process. Like when I started doing this, there are very few people. I've got a list of what I believe are less than 20 people in the country, investment groups that have ever done hotel to multifamily conversion. It's very new. And so at first it was tough. You'd call the lender and to try and get a loan. And they say, well, is it a hotel or is it multifamily? You'd try and talk to the city. Well, are you going to run it temporarily as a hotel? When exactly is it going to become an apartment? All these people telling you no, 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 no. But to your point, when you're changing the use, like I'm glad there are those barriers, right? Those are just opportunities to crack the code. And that's why I'm able to buy this stuff so cheaply. So for example, I'm actually sitting in the property right now that was built in 1985. As a 250-unit Holiday Inn, that's a pretty big hotel for a non-downtown convention center hotel. I know in the multifamily world, 250 units might seem kind of mid-size, but in the hotel world, I would say that like franchised hotels, kind of 2-3 star and lower, you really don't see them much over 150 units. So 250 units is a big hotel, built in 1985, and it had gone down several flags. Owner was distressed, behind on his water bill, about to be behind on his taxes, this kind of thing. And at some point in time, what I really liked about this property, at some point in time, somebody combined all of the rooms. Now, I typically don't like combining rooms just because you go from a studio to a one bedroom on net, you're not getting more rent from one bedroom versus two studios. Sometimes you got to do it because maybe you don't have enough parking or because you've got 250 units and you're worried about demand for 250 studios. In this case, somebody had already come through and combined all of those units and taken the unit count down to 120, but they were true now one bedroom units of almost 600 square foot per unit. And I was able to buy that for $28,000 per door. Okay. My going in cap rate is, I know this sounds fake, my going in cap rate is almost a 22. Okay. Unheard of in the multifamily space. And so what that means is not just big upside, but that means I'm protected on the downside, right? Rates go up, Armageddon happens, rents are flat, etc. Like when your basis is $28,000 a door, you can afford to cut rents to places that folks across the street just can't afford to. So $28,000 a door, and we're spending right now with labor and material about $13,000 a door remodeling. This property already had fire sprinklers in every room. It already had kitchenettes in every room. And so from that standpoint, the conversion is straightforward. And because it was built as a 250-unit property, we have a ton of parking. Some hotels, they actually have, some of them have fewer parking spaces than rooms, if you believe it or not, because they're not designed to run at 100% occupancy. So it took some time to find the right property, but now, boom. What's cool about this one too is an old hotel is not exactly the kind of thing that a bank is very happy to finance, and sellers know that. So you can push them for seller finance terms. We purchased this property. We've got 36 months of interest-only seller finance at 7%. I said $28,000 a door. Purchase price is $3.4 million. I have an as-is appraisal for $4.55 million, right? That's with no value add.
As a hotel.
Here's the other, as a hotel.
Yeah.
As a hotel, right? And we're projecting, even at an 8 cap, to take this thing to about a $9.5 million valuation once the renovation is complete. So there's real arbitrage in the cap rate. Right, I'm buying at the hospitality cap, and when it's converted, and I'm getting the multifamily cap rate once I refinance.
That's amazing.
It's a lot of headache to do it. It is worth it if you can figure out that niche. Yep. I think that's really a cool model. And more people probably don't do it, I would imagine, because the barrier to entry is probably bigger. Like you said, there's a lot of things to figure out. It's not so cookie cutter. You can't just go get a loan easily. You have to be creative in order to get into it. So that's really cool that you've been able to figure that out and use that as your niche. How many of these have you done?
This is the first. So I've been part of others, that bigger groups that were investing in them. Like I came in and tried to watch what they were doing and try to help out on the construction side. This is the first one where I'm the lead GP on it. And Michael's law of the first deal is absolutely true here. I predict to you in 60 days, we're going to have another one closed and going as well.
Boom.
That's insane.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Alex, I think we're running out of time here, but how can people reach out to you if they need to get a hold of you?
Yeah, sure. My website is villicus.capital, villicus.capital. And I'm also on LinkedIn, Alex Cartwright. Absolutely happy to chat with anybody. And I'm active in Michael's DMM community online for folks that are members of that. I've met a lot of great people in there. Get a lot of value out of reading those posts. Highly recommend that to all your listeners.
That's awesome. This has been great, Alex. It's been amazing to see your journey from when I first met you. And I love your resourcefulness and really uncovered something. So congratulations, man. I cannot wait to see what you do next.
Thank you. Thanks for the time, guys. It's a pleasure.
I love this. I love it when people get resourceful. And especially when you're doing change of use of something, every time that's the case, I pay attention. You're seeing a lot of that with short-term rentals. You see it with pad splits. You just see it all over the place. And people that get in early, there's probably a five-year window when you can really take advantage of it. Now short-term rentals aren't as good as they were, 4 years ago, because now everyone's gotten into short-term rentals and now they've declined a little bit. So the window in some degree is closing a little bit. By my goodness, with hotels to apartments, that window is definitely wide open. And I just like how he sensed it. And he goes, man, I'm going to do this hard thing. Because if I crack this nut, there's not a lot of people willing to do the work that I'm willing to put into stuff. And if I buy something at a 22 cap, and I do about the same work as I am for a value-add building, and then I get at the end, I flip a switch, and now I'm all suddenly at an 8 cap. Like, holy, I just created money out of nothing. It's crazy.
Yeah. One thing I want to mention about that, though, is that there is... I don't think we talked about this, or he was talking about it too much, but there is execution risk on that plan. So you go in, you could be banging your head against the wall to try to hopefully get a deal and outwork the other guy and get in to do your standard C to B class apartment renovation. But the other side of that is that once you get into a hotel conversion, you're totally vacant at a certain point. You might start as a hotel and it might drop down. Your vacancy, you know, might be lower for a minute, but then it goes really high when you're trying to convert it. And there's execution risk on that side. So it's which risk do you want to take on that's really important. If you want to go into something that's a little bit more creative, like a multifamily conversion, there may be huge upside. There's also a huge downside.
It's a good point. And you have to be honest about that, because it sounds to me a lot more like ground up development, right? So you have to deal with potentially zoning changes, and those can go one way or another. Then you have to, or you need a special use permit. And sometimes you don't control that. Now, people will tell me, hey, there's ways to mitigate that. I can buy an option on this hotel contingent on me getting this rezoning. That's how land developers do it, and that's how they would approach it. And by the way, if they don't get the special use permit or the rezoning, then they don't execute the option, for example. There's ways to mitigate it, but you're right. To me, there is execution risk. One reason I don't like ground-up development, because, well, there's no cash flow for 2 or 3 years. There's that execution risk that you don't get the permitting that you need. And then you are at the whim of the market. Like 3 years, who knows what's going to happen? And so I don't control that much. So I don't love it as much. I think it's just simply for that more risky, but it's also can be more lucrative as well. And this could be maybe somewhere in between.
Everyone out there, I think the lesson is find your niche, whatever you think it is, whatever you're good at, offset it with a partner that's maybe offsets where you're bad at things, and you guys can go and find your niche and run at things, or just do it on your own. And if some people that I know, they want to stay kind of, they want to have less partners, they want to just do kind of more low to the ground stuff or smaller deals, and you can go that direction and find your niche that way, or you can scale up and go with a bunch of investors and find a different niche, as long as you can test it and it works. And you think that it's scalable, then it could be totally viable. Maybe you've worked through all the issues that lower the execution risk and you feel comfortable with it. I think banging your head against the wall to get into a market and finding an already cash flowing asset is probably more ideal, at least for me, because you're jumping into something that's already producing revenue. But to each their own. I mean, it looks like Alex has found a niche that's working for him. People should do that for themselves.
Well, it reminds me of Who Not How, right? It's his book called Who Not How, where most people try to figure out how to do something, and then they don't take action because they can't figure out how to do something. And the book argues it's not really how to do something, it's finding the right who. And it's like anything with multifamily syndication, which is why Alex joined our mentoring program, is because, you know what? I don't have all the answers. I don't have all the details. All I need is the right who to work with to help me figure that stuff out. And it sounds to me like it did the same thing on this hotel conversion, because if you have the right who, you have the right attorney that can handle these rezoning or these special use permits, they can tell you exactly what the probabilities of getting them, what the process costs, how long it takes, how much it costs. That's probably what he did. We didn't talk about it, but that's probably, if I know Alex a little bit, that's probably how I approached it. So it's like that with anything in life. Just know, as an entrepreneur, you can't have all the details figured out. It literally never happens, ever. If you need to get everything lined up before you do something, it's never going to happen. In other words, you have to be able to move forward with incomplete information. That is the nature of entrepreneurship. And I picked on Alex a little bit because he's a professor, right? But he is also an entrepreneur at the same time. And that's the key. If you want to move ahead with any kind of real estate investing as an entrepreneur, do the best you can. Just know that you're not going to have all the answers, that those answers will come, that you will attract the right person that will help you, that who, not how. So hopefully you guys were inspired by that. Again, we'd love to have you invest alongside us with Overlook Apartments. Go to invest.nighthawkequity.com. Watch the webinar. Again, you have to be accredited for this opportunity. We'd love to have you. Until next time, catch you later.
Thanks for listening. Take the next step toward financial freedom by enrolling in the number one apartment investing course on the market. The Apartments 101 Masterclass will give you proven strategies to buy your first apartment building with no money down. Sign up for free lifetime access to learn how to close your first deal in as little as 180 days. Head over to apartments101.co to start your free training. That's apartments101.co.